Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
The following details an early investigation by the Whitney brothers, before their steep rise to internet stardom. This is, as Darian would someday put it, the one that changed everything. The light beside the lens turned green. Darian Whitney gave a thumbs up. Louise Fitz established the Fitz House in 1982 as a respite home for foster kids, Reese Whitney explained to the camera. Darian turned around to show the compact house behind him. He and Reese stood on a cement path which cut through the dead center of the lawn and led to the white door in the middle of the house's red brick face. The whole house looked very symmetrical, with two front windows, one on each side of the front door, and matching white shutters on both sides of either window. The brothers moved in front of the camera to put the house in frame behind them. Darian picked up the intro. Prior to being a foster home, the Fitz House was, get this, a funeral home where the dead were prepared for their final rest. That's right, said Reese. We're going to talk to the current owners soon, who are relatives of Louise Fitz herself. Now, Louise claimed the front door opened behind them. Neither brother noticed it first, but after a few seconds, Darian glanced at the camera screen and saw a frail, crooked woman standing on the porch. Jeez, he hissed, flinching and spinning around. He managed to collect himself in the split second before coming face to face with the woman. You must be Bessie, Reese said, extending his hand, then wishing he hadn't. He felt afraid to grip the brittle hand offered in return. Bessie Fitz looked somewhere in her late 40s, but as frail as a woman twice her age. She shook Reese's outstretched hand faintly while her left hand supported her against the doorframe. I am Bessie Fitz, she said, sounding tired of her own name. And you're Louise Fitz's daughter? Asked Darian. No, niece, Bessie replied. Louise didn't have children of her own, just the Fosters. Lots of Fosters. She left me and my brother the house in her will. He'll be around soon. Well, thanks for letting us do this. Mind if we start recording already? Reese asked, gesturing to the camera his brother Darian held pointed upward at Bessie. Did you bring the check? Bessie asked. Oh, yeah, it's right here. Reese slid the check for $400 out of his back pocket and handed it to the crooked woman. She said, Record away. Then, turning slowly, always with one hand in contact with the surface, she walked them into the house. They entered a cramped living room with two couches facing each other and not much else. Bessie gestured for the boys to have a seat on one couch and sat down herself on the other. So, as you can see, there's not a lot of room in here, she said. No, there's not, Darian agreed. How many kids stayed here at a time? Bessie issued an involuntary sigh, resigning to a conversation she had had dozens of times before. Aunt Louise ran a respite home, not a normal foster home, for kids who were between houses or caught up in the system with nowhere to go. She started this place in the late 80s, you know. The foster care system wasn't even close to what it is today. Most kids only stayed here for a week or less. But she might have had 6 or 7 kids living here at a time. All in this little house? Reese asked. He pointed his own camera at Darian, who expressed exaggerated shock. Bessie said, "Yeah, she repurposed the basement after she bought the place from the mortician's son. She set up 3 bunk beds down there to help fit everybody." "More like the don't fits house, know what I mean?" Reese joked into the camera. Bessie didn't look amused. He quickly apologized. "So wait," Darian cut in. "Wasn't the basement..." Bessie said, "The mortuary? Yep. Those kids slept right where the dead were cut open and pumped full of formaldehyde. Louise tried to keep that a secret from them, but they always learned somehow, you know. Even before the internet, kids talk. Especially about that sort of thing." "Well, yeah, I would too," Darian said. "So is that kind of how the haunting rumors started?" Bessie nodded. Reese asked, "Can you tell us a bit about that for the video?" Before Bessie said anything, the front door opened behind her. In walked a man of similar age but far better health. Darian made to stand, but the man waved him down. "I'll come to you," he said as he walked around Bessie's couch with a jolly grin. He shook both brothers' hands vigorously, and when he finished shaking Darian's hand, said, "I'm actually a big fan of your channel." "Oh, really?" Darian asked, genuinely surprised. Their audience skewed pretty young, so it always surprised him when they met older fans. "It's Clint, right?" "Clint Fitz, that's right," Clint confirmed. "My sister been treating you boys all right? She gets a little numb to this place." "Oh no, she's been great," Reese insisted. Clint sat down beside her and rubbed one of her bony hands. He said, "I'm sure you guys understand. We get a lot of, well, we get some interesting types here. But I've seen your stuff. I know you guys are good at what you do." Darian said, "Thanks, man. We were just about to talk about the haunting. Want to tell us a bit about that?" Clint said, "Absolutely. That's why you're here, right?" He laughed to himself, then grew serious. "The first time Aunt Louise said anything weird related to this place, she talked about something a kid saw down in the basement. He said he watched a shadow figure walk from bed to bed, real slow, like he was examining each one." Clint used his finger held in front of him to demonstrate the shadow figure's slow trajectory. "That kid was the only one sleeping down there at the time, so he just got up and ran out before the figure got to his bed. Louise didn't let kids sleep down there alone after that." "She believed him?" Darian asked. "Oh yeah, I have a feeling she might have known the basement was haunted already." "And more kids saw it later, right?" Reese asked. "Oh, absolutely," Clint said. "So many of them saw it that word spread all over the state. By the 90s, kids showed up here already knowing about the haunting. It's sad because Aunt Louise was a saint trying her best to help those kids out, but they were terrified to come here." "Did it ever, like, do anything to one of the kids?" Darian asked. "Only the ones that weren't careful," Bessie answered. Clint laughed nervously. She's not wrong, actually." "Seriously?" Darian exclaimed, leaning forward into Reese's frame. Clint said, "A few kids claimed the ghost touched them when they weren't paying attention. Came up behind them and just..." He tapped Bessie gently on the side of her neck. "They supposedly had horrible nightmares afterwards." Bessie said, "One girl I actually talked to myself said she felt a cold hand on her shoulder and knew it was the ghost's touch. She said she felt the chill from the hand seep into her muscles and into her chest." "So, Do you think it might be something evil or demonic? Rhys asked. Whoa, careful there, Clint cut in with a false grin. We don't like to throw around the D word too much. Honestly, there's not a lot that points in that direction, but we don't want to accidentally invite something like that in. I've done a lot of research about those sorts of things. Whatever's down there is at best harmlessly curious and at worst angry, but I don't think it's evil. We don't want that to change. It always comes up behind people, right? Darian asked. That's right, answered Clint. While you guys are here tonight, I'd suggest standing or sitting across from each other. Here's the thing with this ghost. It'll touch you, make noises, move stuff, the whole nine yards. But all you have to do to make it go away is tell it to. Rhys asked, like, how? You can literally just say, go away, and it'll go, Clint said. The kids figured that out back in the day. Thing is, you gotta see it coming. It'll sneak up on you if you're not paying attention. And that's when it touches you. Is it exclusively in the basement? Asked Rhys. Bessie shook her head. She said, it can go anywhere it wants in the house. Don't go anywhere alone. Rhys said, Roger that. Then turned to Darian and said, you're gonna have to be my bathroom buddy. They discussed a few logistics, then Clint helped Bessie stand and they moved to leave. Rhys and Darian followed them to the door, recording as always. I'm gonna lock this, Clint said, twisting the doorknob in his hand. I'll leave you two with a spare key in case you need to leave at any time. Just, if you leave, please, go away, Bessie suddenly shouted. The Whitney brothers both spun around. Darian remembered at the last second to swivel his camera to look behind them, but there was no shadowy figure there. At least, not one they could see. That's all you need to do, Bessie said in an astonishingly calm voice for someone who had just seen a ghost. Did you actually see it just now? Rhys asked. His heart was still settling, but the crooked woman and her brother appeared perfectly at ease. She said, just keep your eyes open. Clint said, you'll be all right. They bid the brothers farewell and closed the door. The brothers didn't move until after they heard the lock click. Then they shared matching, slanted smiles. Dude, she was intense, said Darian. Rhys, that bit before they left? Dude, we should check some other channels to see if they do that to everybody. I bet they do. I was just thinking that, Darian replied. He kind of seems like he actually believes in it though, doesn't he? Clint? Rhys said, I don't know, he might just be a really good actor. He reacted pretty strong to that whole demon thing though, huh? Hey, Darian scolded. Don't say the D word. So how you want to start? Rhys asked. Well, we haven't seen the basement. Should we check that out? Rhys nodded and they headed to the basement door. Darian opened it and said, check this out. Classic. By classic, he meant the stairwell could have fit into any generic horror movie. The narrow stone steps were incredibly steep, and the gray brick lining either side looked like the walls of a deep well. At the bottom, an open doorway awaited. Through it, they could just barely see the feet of a dusty bed frame. You rolling? Darian asked. Rhys nodded, and Darian yelled, we're coming down. If you don't want us to, give us a sign now. Rhys turned his camera to himself and said, I guess the investigation has begun. As he carefully descended, he continued speaking into the camera. So, there are countless stories from kids who lived down here about a shadow figure that would give them nightmares if it touched them. No one knows exactly what or who this spirit is. It's a big part of the mystery. Maybe we'll get lucky and figure out how to solve it tonight. They crammed together at the bottom of the stairs at the threshold to the bedroom, or bunk room, as the kids who lived there had once called it. Darian asked, is the big surprise here yet? Don't spoil the surprise yet, Rhys scolded. Darian made a pouty face, and both brothers laughed. Rhys clapped loudly against his own thigh to mark a cut in the video. They had rehearsed this tease on the way over and nailed it in one take. After a quick battery check, Reese said, "Let's keep going." The boys entered the musty bunk room one after the other, then stood in awed silence. It didn't look like Luis's niece and nephew had touched the room since acquiring the house. Dust coated the three empty bunk beds which dominated most of the tight space, and dusty cobwebs hung in every corner. Some dangled in single strands from the ceiling and swayed with the minuscule breeze that followed the Whitney brothers in. "For some reason, I thought it'd be bigger," Reese said, budging into the silence. And it had been such a perfect silence. Buried underground, the air inside the room felt as dead as those who were once brought to it, cold and stiff. A single incandescent light bulb hung from a mount in the ceiling. Its wires ran across the ceiling and into the wall. Reese pulled at its hanging cord, but nothing happened. "It feels heavy, doesn't it?" asked Darian, the usual fluff for the video. But unlike usual, he meant it. Reese felt it too. Although no one they knew of had died in the basement or anywhere in the house for that matter, a rumbling dread hung in the air as if suspended from the drifting cobwebs. It could even be left over from when this place was a funeral home. The basement was the mortuary, said Reese. Darian said, "Oh yeah, that's right. There's still like a specter of death here. Crazy how much it..." "Whoa!" Reese suddenly spun, and his light shone directly in Darian's face. He shouted, "Go away!" Then waited, staring into Darian's questioning eyes. "Sorry, I thought I saw something," Reese explained. "It kinda stepped from next to that bed into the space behind you." Neither of them noticed every dangling cobweb above them breezing towards the door, but they would notice later when they reviewed the footage. "I guess that worked," Reese finally said. With a nod and a thumbs up, Darian set his camera down. Reese stopped recording too. "Man, I actually thought I saw something for a second. Like, in the corner of my eye, it made me jump for real." Darian grinned. "Way to run with it. You actually freaked me out for a second. I mean, straight up, this house feels kind of different, doesn't it?" Reese's phone stole his attention. He read something, then quickly shoved it back in his pocket and held his camera up again. "Quick, dude. Gage just got here." Darian shrugged off his backpack and unzipped it, then crouched down beside it. "Ready?" he asked. Reese pressed record and said, "You're good." "You guys ready to see what we're doing tonight?" Darian asked Reese's camera. From his backpack, he slowly removed a folded black board. With a showman's flair, he let the board flop open, revealing large, ornate letters spelling Ouija. Reese said, "That's right, everybody. We're doing the Ouija board tonight." Darian, "Now, we know playing with these is ill-advised in most cases, but we talked with some of our paranormally educated friends before coming here. They don't think whatever's in this house is anything demonic." Reese, "Yeah, the main thing we wanted to be sure about is that this thing can't, like, attach itself to us. Like, whatever happens tonight, we'll be able to walk out of here the same as we came in." Darian, "Yeah, because I mean, who's going to edit the video if we get pos..." A loud knock boomed down the stone staircase. Reese jerked his camera toward the stairs, then back to his brother, who had just enough time to conjure an alarmed reaction. Darian nodded toward the stairs, and Reese cautiously led the way. "Who could it be?" he whispered dramatically. "The owners would have just let themselves in, right?" "Yeah," Darian concurred. They stepped toward the front door, both filming. Outside, a fist hammered the door again. Reese's face expressed concern as he called out, "Who is it?" A high-pitched, almost squeaky voice came through.
"I am a poor, lost soul. Please let me in."
Reese, hiding a smirk, asked Darian's camera, "What do you think? It's going to be dark soon." I don't think we can just leave a poor lost soul out there all alone, do you? No way, Darian said. Open the door and let the poor guy in. Rhys threw open the door and revealed he and Darian's best friend, Gage Kepler. He had been the third wheel in most of their videos, and their small audience loved him. They had started constructing these dramatic entrances for him about 3 or 4 videos back. According to analytics, most viewers clicked the like button within seconds of Gage appearing. "What's up, buddies?" Gage asked, hugging each of them in turn. He said, "Dude, this place is super creepy. You feeling the vibes?" "Oh yeah, dude, we've been feeling them," Rhys answered. He pointed his camera through the open front door and said, "Take a look at that, everybody. It got dark so fast." Darian said, "We were just showing everybody the Ouija board we brought to play in the basement." Gage suddenly turned serious. He asked, "Do you guys really think this is the kind of place you should be messing with a Ouija board?" Darian turned his camera on himself and said, "I guess we'll find out, won't we?" Off camera, Rhys fist-bumped Gage, thanking him for the added drama.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They turned off the cameras while they went back to the basement to set up the board. They situated themselves on 3 sides, intentionally leaving the side facing the door open, the idea being they would invite the spirit to come in and join them at the board. Holding his camera in his left hand so he could touch the planchette on the Ouija board with his right, Rhys kicked off the session. "Is there someone here who wants to talk to us?" A wispy strand of web detached from the ceiling and lazily lilted down between the Whitney brothers. They did not notice it until it landed on the corner of the Ouija board. As soon as the web touched the board, the planchette started moving. It stopped, perfectly centered on the word, "Yes." "And here we go," Rhys smirked. "Are you the spirit that gives people bad dreams?" asked Darian. The planchette didn't move. "Maybe we should ask something besides a yes or no question," Gage suggested. Darian said, "How about your name then? What's your name?" With barely a pause, the planchette slid down to the board's alphabet. It danced around the letters until it had spelled out Nathaniel. "Dude, that's the longest word I've ever seen a Ouija board spell," Rhys observed, thinking Darian had spelled the name. Darian asked, "So, Nathaniel, were you one of the dead bodies that got brought in here?" With a hesitant slowness, the planchette wobbled toward no. Rhys gave the other two sideways glances to see if one of them was resisting for some reason. He couldn't tell which of them was guiding the planchette either. He was just following along. The planchette spent 2 seconds on no, then slid back to the alphabet. Guys? Gage questioned. Darian shuddered and, sounding deeply concerned, said, Yeah, generally it's not a good sign if the spirit starts writing without a prompt. Rhys, impressed with his brother's acting, said, "Hold on, let's just see what it has to say." Which convinced the others Rhys had control of the situation. This time, Darian spoke the letters as the planchette marked each one. N-O-T, not maybe? D-E-A, Oh, God. Not dead? Gage whispered to Reese. Okay, shut it down, Reese said. Darian felt his brother pushing the planchette and let it slide to goodbye. They left it there for a second, while nothing happened. Then Reese slammed the board closed and tossed the planchette into their bag. Gage and Darian looked at him blankly. Reese said, Cut. Okay, guys, where is this going? What's not dead supposed to mean? Oh, what? Darian demanded, confused. Gage, was this your idea? You gotta run this stuff by. Hey, don't look at me, Gage said, taking a step backward and pointing at Darian, then Reese, then back at Darian. He said, I'm just playing along, guys. Reese, wasn't that you pushing the thing around? Reese shook his head. He swallowed. He said, Okay, hold on. Let's just, for a second, pretend it's possible we actually talked to some kind of spirit. Wait, who spelled out the name? The others shook their heads. Reese collected himself. Okay, so there's some spirit named Nathaniel. What did he mean about not being dead? Darian scratched his head and said, My understanding is that there are supposedly two kinds of spirits. You've got your human spirits, which are like the lost or trapped souls of people who died. Then you've got your non-human spirits, if you believe in that stuff. Those are your demons, poltergeists, and I guess technically angels and stuff. Darian's entire body suddenly contracted in on itself. He fell to his side, squeezing everything, including his eyes, tight. Yo, what's going on? Gage exclaimed. Reese yelled, Darian! He set his camera down and dove toward his brother. Darian stammered. It's touching me. Oh, got it, Reese whispered, his entire demeanor changing. Okay. Darian, what's it feel like? Not pretending, Darian squealed, sounding like he might puke if he squeezed himself any tighter. We know, man. Do you need to get out of here? Reese noticed Gage had frozen. The scene was about to hit a brick wall unless Gage helped him make it exciting. Seriously, Darian shouted now, the veins on his neck looking like they might tear out of his skin. Everything else, all fake. We're fakes, fakes. Dude, what are you doing? Reese demanded, now standing tall and angry. You're ruining the take. But then Reese realized he had set down his camera, though it was still recording, and Gage wasn't holding his. Darian would have known no cameras were on him, so why was his acting so over the top? Darian sucked in an enormous breath and sat up suddenly. First, he braced himself on his hands, then he leaned back to look Reese directly in the eyes. No, he said. There won't be more takes. Get upstairs. We gotta get upstairs now. Reese! Gage shouted. Reese looked back. His own camera's LED light lay sideways, shining directly into his face. Squinting, he noticed Gage pointing at something behind Darian. He whipped around and saw, silhouetted in the doorway, a slender shadow stooping over, retracting its hand from Darian's quivering shadow. Go away, Reese shouted. The shadow vanished before it finished standing up. I need to get upstairs, Darian nearly sobbed. He bolted through the doorway. Reese snatched up the backpack and followed his brother. Gage tailed him. Once they all reached the top, Darian slammed the door shut and turned on the lights. The electricity upstairs worked, thankfully. Falling onto the nearest couch, Darian began to cry. Not to be a jerk, but can you do this after you explain what's going on? Gage demanded. Darian collected himself surprisingly quickly. He sat up and gestured for Reese and Gage to have a seat on the other couch. I don't know how to say this, he started. That was all real. Something actually touched me down there. I felt it, just like a normal hand on my shoulder, only a lot colder and sort of heavier, like it was always pressing down on me. Reese said, Dude, that old room and all the cobwebs and everything, they probably all just got to your head. No, Darian calmly interrupted. No, after I fell, the hand moved all the way along my shoulder and up my neck, and when it touched the top of my head, it showed me everything. It was Nathaniel from the Ouija board. Oh yeah, what'd he show you? Gage asked rudely. He showed me what happened to him, Darian said. Not dead. It doesn't mean he's an inhuman spirit. He meant he was not dead when they brought him here. Did he work here or something? Reese asked, starting to realize he might actually believe his brother. He hadn't seen him so emotional since they were kids. Darian answered, No, it's pretty rough. He was like catatonic when they brought him in. I guess somehow he got like misdiagnosed. With death? Gage asked. Basically, Darian answered humorlessly. He was a real sickly guy, and I guess everybody was expecting him to die, so they just assumed. And when they brought him here, he was still out cold, but somewhat conscious. He didn't know where he was until he started feeling them. Darian wormed, like he presently felt whatever he was about to describe. He could feel them slicing and pumping. He looked up. Guys, they started filling him with embalming fluid while he was still alive. An abrupt double thud against the basement door sent them all running outside, spooked. Reese locked the front door. They drove to a motel and rented a room. As they prepared for bed, they discussed what could be done for poor Nathaniel's spirit. If this is even real, Gage had clarified. Darian insisted he felt Nathaniel's memory, which probably fed all those nightmares the children complained about, had been shown to him because Nathaniel needed help. He needed to be set free or sent on. But sadly, the not-yet-famous Whitney Brothers ghost hunting team had neither the experience nor the resources to help. If we had an audience, a real audience, maybe someone would know what to do and they could tell us, Darian remarked after they had shut off all the lights. Well, there's not much we can do about that, Reese said. Darian shook his head. No, there is. We can stop being just another fake paranormal show. We should delete everything. Erase it all. We should start from scratch with a new channel where we look for actual spirits and maybe actually help them or something. You're complaining about not having a big enough audience, but you want to start from zero? Gage asked. Darian did not respond. A few minutes later, he said, I can't keep doing it like this, whatever we do. I can't fake it anymore. Not after what happened back there. All right, Reese said. He pulled his papery sheet up a little higher. Let's just sleep on it, okay? I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. If that was real, if the Fitz house is actually haunted, that means the paranormal is real. There's life after death. You're right, Darian. We can't do it like this anymore. Let's take it all down and start over. You guys are crazy, Gage said, but the edges of his voice quivered. Yeah, maybe, Darian said. But we're a couple crazy guys who might be able to show the world what else is out there. And, as most of you probably know, the Whitney brothers would go on to do just that. You made it out. Congratulations. If you enjoyed the story, please rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen. Reviews are the best way to support the podcast and help it grow. The next best way is to buy merch from thewarningwoods.myshopify.com. The link is also in the description below. If you want more creepy content, follow me on Instagram at thewarningwoods. If you feel ready, meet me here next week for another journey into the Warning Woods. Thank you for listening.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.